David Sifry, I've gotten so interested in Technorati, that page. I mean, 100 top blogs, what the world is talking about, thinking about. And I keep wondering how many thousands of little people are out there monitoring all these computers to tell you. I mean, this just in from Tokyo, or, hey, we got a surge of interest from New York. How does it work? And how many people are there in your warehouse?
Well, in a sense, you could say that, you know, there are 700,000 webloggers that are all contributing to this massive aggregation and content that you find at Technorati. So you know, it's all the people in the blogosphere who are using a modern content management tool.
But how many in the Technorati office building?
Oh, well, you know, we're pretty modest.
Count them.
Oh, you mean me and my minion, my army of gnomes?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that would just be me.
No, seriously. This is a one-man tool?
Well, I mean, I should explain a little bit about how Technorati actually got started. No, there's, you know, I've got a couple of people who are helping out more on sort of an operational end. But Technorati got started, frankly, as a sort of Thanksgiving project last year. When I wanted to create some tools that I hadn't seen for myself, and in the blog world, as Doc Searles likes to say, and Dave Weinberger, and you know all the wonderful Clue Train Manifesto guys, that markets are conversations,
yeah.
And weblogs are a fantastic way at participating in that conversation. But the thing that I wanted to know, and I mean I'll be somewhat vain. But the thing that I wanted to know was, when I was writing to my weblog, I wanted to know who was talking about me and what were they saying and what were those conversations that were going on, because there wasn't really any sort of centralized way of pulling all of that information together. And so Technorati was born as a project to, you know, pull in and essentially read literally these hundreds of thousands of webloggers' blogs. At as close to a time to as when they post as humanly possible.
But, David, I'm still not clear. How does it read them? How does it analyze the content, much less prioritize these conversations?
Well, this is really the beauty of weblogging, and I think what really makes it very different from other forms of content that we found on the web. Because, frankly, from a technology perspective, weblogs and weblogging software, there isn't all that much that's new there, right? Essentially, but what you've got is a set of tools that automate the process of publishing to the web. And that, in and of itself, is very, very powerful because it allows, you know, a non-technical person to have a voice. But what it also does is it creates, shall we say, exhaust, right? There's the exhaust of the process of writing for the web, of using blogging software, yeah, any of the major tools, you name it. One of the things that they do is they let a number of websites know whenever you update your weblog,
yep.
Something called a ping gets yep. sent out. And that ping says to a number of these different sites, and Technorati is one of them, but there are others, like weblogs.com, for example, that, hey, I just updated my weblog. And what happens is Technorati and, you know, some other sites watch for these pings. And as soon as we see somebody has, Chris, you've just updated your weblog.
Right.
Great. What we then do is immediately, in an automated way, send out a little spider. Right? It's a little automated program that runs out and reads your blog. And it analyzes it. And it pulls all of that information into a big database.
How does it know the quotable pull quote? I mean, the analytical core of what somebody has just written.
Well, what's really... So this is what's fascinating, right? The thing that makes Technorati, I think, interesting, or at least it made it interesting to me, is really there's a fundamental aspect of the web, right, which is the hyperlink. And we've all talked about this, right? You know, this is the link is the fundamental thing that makes hypertext documents hypertext,
right?
It's what... It's in effect, a vote of attention right? That when you link from your page to another page, whenever you write something about that, you see, oh, I found this interesting. Oh, check this out. New in Tokyo, right?
Right.
And you actually hyperlink from your weblog to somewhere else. You are, in essence, making a vote of your attention.
Yes.
And you're making that vote public. And, you know, in and of itself, just one vote is all that is, right? It's just one thing. But if you can actually read, not 10,000, not 20,000, not, you know, 100,000. Well, right now, Technorati is reading on an automated basis over 700,000 weblogs.
Amazing.
And you aggregate all of that information, and you start looking at, oh, well, who's linking to what and when? And then mirror back that information to all of us, the webloggers. All that Technorati is doing is, you know, there's no humongous artificial intelligence engine, you know, there's no singularity at the core. There's nothing like that, right?
Right.
All that we're doing is we're communicating with each other when we write. And what Technorati is doing is mirroring back what we're saying to each other.
Well, now, okay, I just want to take this. I mean, it seems to me there's a huge, almost philosophical leap here in the achievement. I mean, yes, you do say, who's reading me? You do say, what are the hot links or the new things that bloggers are talking about? But you also compile in a sort of objective way, but that also has human subjectivity and opinion in it. You sort of define what the world is thinking about, finds interesting at this moment. It becomes what I would call a sort of a huge editorial conference without editors. This is a monster leap.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. I think it comes out of an old technology that was attempted to be used in a number of different ways early on in the web's development, but never really was able to work well because it didn't have critical mass. And this is something called collaborative filtering. The idea here is
collaborative filtering. Is that another name for an editorial conference without editors?
Yeah, essentially, right. It's a way of saying, oh, okay, well, if you can aggregate all of these votes of attention and start reflecting that back at people, what you're actually doing is people are making an editorial decision based on what they're reading and what they're linking to. And even though as individuals that in and of itself doesn't necessarily have a quote-unquote objective metric, if you're able to aggregate hundreds or thousands of these subjective opinions and then show them back to people as, you know, as a list, that in and of itself can be interpreted as a filtering or an editorial decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the key things here is that Technorati isn't doing anything that we aren't already doing as human beings. And I think this is really critical, right, is that we're not trying to, you know, create some new, new humongous way to understand language or to do any of that kind of stuff, right? That's the old AI theoretics, right, of the 1980s.
Okay.
I think, and we've all pretty much discredited that kind of machine learning. It's not about machines telling
right.
us what's important. It's about us telling ourselves what's important.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you, and that's exactly what I consider to be the real significance here. I'm still sort of a New York Times person, having worked there and read it all my life. But it
love
seems,
it myself.
But it seems to me you've really done the two big things that the New York Times, we all wanted it to do, which was A, play God, tell us in the 8 columns, or now 6 columns of a front page, what's really important in the world. And the second thing is to form a community of readers. I mean, Richard Rovere, back in the 50s or early 60s, defined the establishment as those people who read the New York Times. It forms a club. It is a community. It is a kind of network. It's a feedback loop of, you know, who's really in and connected. But now we really have a much closer approximation of both those things, a sort of honest, open vote of intelligent people around the world as to what's actually interesting. And secondly, a network in which every voice counts, not just, you know, a few, very well trained and conscientious and serious people on West 43rd Street in New York.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is not to displace for a minute the value of editors. I think.
Well,
editors,
but now wait a sec. Are you serious about that? Because it seems to me it does take the editors out of there.
No, I completely disagree. I think editors are incredibly valuable. What editors do And you know, pardon me, I didn't go to journalism school, and I don't mean to.
Nor did I.
So I don't mean to be negative on editing if I miss something. But to me, what an editor does is, you know, an editor, number one, you know, you're not going to get fact checking right from a web blogger.
No.
You're not necessarily going to get a level of diligence, and you know, and not necessarily going to see what you know, what the hidden agenda is. Right. So,
right.
So an editor, you know, in his job, what he's trying to do is, number one, you know, make the story understandable to the lay reader. Cut out the stuff that's unimportant. Try to, in the sense, you know, remove bias from the story. Tell the truth as it could be possibly. I think as long as we all understand, however, that even editors and edited publications have a voice, and in some sense have an agenda, even if it is, you know, somewhat muted, right? And that there are, you know, ethical issues and responsibilities that editors provide. But fundamentally what an editor is doing is it's saving us time. The reason why I read the New York Times and I don't, you know, just sit around and read all of the bloggers is that I know that this stuff has been looked at, pre-digested, fact-checked, interviewed, to the extent that investigations occur, investigated, and I feel like what the editor has done is presenting me with a view of what he thinks, or she thinks, or the editor collaborative thinks is important. Now, what's interesting about what Technorati does, I think, is that in the blogging world, we throw away the auspice of objectivity. Right? These are individual human beings.
Let me just say, no, David, I think you're being too generous to the people whose jobs, in a certain way, you're undermining here. I don't know if you saw Jeff Jarvis's piece. Dave Weiner cited it on his page today.
Yes,
but
I did.
Basically talking about, I don't need editors, and he was being perfectly humble about it. He was saying, you know, the shit detectors out there reading me will screen this. They will vote, as you say, with their attention or not. They know there's a lot of subjectivity here, but an editor is basically just getting in his way and in my way as a reader.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. So, you know, again, I think it really depends on, it's not a question of either or. It's a question of both. You can have editors and an edited publication that, you know, strives for certain levels of, quote-unquote, correctness and, quote-unquote, objectivity.
Yep.
And you can have bloggers, which in a sense, if you were to look at this from a newspaper analogy, the closest that a blogger comes is a columnist. You're telling your personal opinion.
Yes.
And to the extent that a blogger is a good writer, in the same sense as to the extent that a columnist is a good writer, the amount of editing that's necessary is relatively small. And for a blogger's perspective, the editing is none. Right, his feedback is going to come back in terms of the number of people who are linking to him, the people who are talking about him, the conversation that goes on around the things that he or she is writing. So I don't think that it's an aspect of, well, editors are bad and bloggers are good. I think it's an aspect of, hey, there's room for both. And I firmly believe that just because a site like Technorati is out there that's helping to find new and interesting weblogs, that's helping to point out the collective imagination about what's going on in the news, what people are talking about, what's interesting, what's relevant, what's not being covered perhaps by the major news media, that doesn't necessarily replace the need for good editing, good fact-checking, and so on.
David, I'd love you to step back and then step ahead. First, back. Who's David Cifri? How did you get to this point? And I'm still sort of recovering from the notion that that there aren't hundreds, maybe thousands of people inside the Technorati tent screening all these things. But how did you figure this out? Where do you come from?
You know, as Dave Weiner likes to say, I'm from Long Island.
And you're in California now.
And I'm in California, right. So in a sense, you know, any New Yorker who lives out in California is a wolf in sheep's clothing. No, but I think that the aspect here is that I've been a techie and a geek, you know, for forever. I got my first computer when I was 9, you know, and started programming. And long story short, I've run a number of different businesses, started a few companies, and had a ball out here. And the way that this all got started was I had a weblog, Sifri's Alerts, that you know, people were reading, and people would send me comments and feedback and so on. But the thing that I wanted to know, I wanted more. I wanted to know, you know, what was going on in terms of the conversations, what other people were talking about, and how I could find out more information about that. How are people linking to each other? What is the social structure? How does this social networking work? You know, I read Malcolm Gladwell's great book, The Tipping Point.
Yes.
Who are the connectors here? What are the different, you know, who are the mavens? You know, how do you, and what's remarkable is that because the web has, you know, has this remarkable structure underneath it all, and it starts out with the simple hyperlink, right, as a vote of attention.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wonderful experience to be able to take that and say, ah, I think we can mine some of this data. I think that we can, and deliver it back to the bloggers and show them real value, and expose them to things that maybe I or they didn't even know about themselves and didn't know about others.
This is fascinating. All right, but that tells us how you got here. Now look ahead and answer some of those incredibly interesting questions. I mean, what sort of social network are you building here? And what's it going to be like when we have this, an even more sort of ramified, broader body of readers and writers who are all connecting? It is a democratic system. It's an egalitarian system. I say it favors the adrenal elite. I mean, sort of get up and go sort of early adopters. But it's going to be a bigger and bigger pool of active minds contributing to this network. Where are we going with it?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, but I think that I can make a couple of educated guesses. To me, the thing that is so that I get so optimistic about when I think about weblogging is I think it's an incredible lesson in civics for a new generation.
Mm.
I think a lot of people like me come from a generation where we were just incredibly cynical about the political process. Never felt included as a part of it, never felt like our voices made a difference, and felt essentially tremendously excluded from that whole process. Whether it's, you know, whether it's the national election or it's your local school board.
Interesting.
Or
your local or national newspaper or network broadcast, too, I would say.
That's right. I mean, we've been living in a very, shall I say, industrialized form of media.
Yep.
This whole idea that we actually consider ourselves consumers, right? I mean, that to me is fundamentally screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
We're not consumers. At best, at least, we're customers. At best, we're citizens. And why we allow ourselves to be pandered to and be called consumers comes from this, you know, this ancient notion that there is an elite that, you know, that sends out, that produces information or produces content, and that we individuals sit there with mouths open, tied to our chairs, and consume.
Amen.
And I think that that's just incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a horrible dystopian vision. And what the internet brought, and I think what weblogging helps to make easier, and what I hope Technorati helps to facilitate, is discourse. It's conversation. We all have voices. And let the best voices naturally rise to the top because of, you know, of a wonderful meritocracy that occurs because of, you know, the ideas that we're saying and the way that we're saying them, as opposed to the money in our pocket.
Well, listen, this is the Kool-Aid, I guess, but it's a vision, and I love it. It sounds like the end-user democracy that we've been sort of promised on the web or in the Internet, but suddenly it feels real, or a so-called semiotic democracy in which the whole world gets in on the decision of not just, you know, whether you go to war or you don't, but also what's on page one and what's important, what's interesting.
Yes, and we're all part of that feedback loop.
I mean, a sort of cultural democracy, too.
Yes. And it's going to be interesting to see how well that scales. But I think fundamentally that the core issue is the feeling that I have a voice and that there are others out there who can listen to that voice. And just because I have a voice, it doesn't mean that I'm drowning out someone else. Right? That's the fallacy of the broadcast media, right? Is that, well, you can only have a certain number of broadcast stations because after a while you're drowning out everybody else.
Yeah.
And what's wonderful about the internet is, no, we can all publish. And what's wonderful about some of the formats that you've talked about with other people or in other interviews, things like RSS, is that I can find people of like-minded interest, and then I can selectively subscribe to what they're saying and listen to them, and I'm not drowning out anyone. And that, to me, is the pure democratic ideal of the answer to, you know, to bad, quote-unquote bad speech is more speech.
Well, suddenly there's a machine that can handle it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned RSS. Do you want to give your own opinion on the RSS wars? Are they over? is this peace in our time or what?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, so from Technorati's perspective, all I care about, you know, all Technorati really cares about is put the data in a format that has a structure, right? It's sort of the old joke, right? The great thing about standards is that there are so many of them.
I thought you were going to say if we didn't have double standards, we wouldn't have any standards at all.
No. I think the important thing is that we're publishing our information and we're publishing it in a way that has structure, and that structure is defined somewhere. And hopefully, we can agree to some basic formats of how that structure looks like. And that's really all that RSS is, you know, and other formats that are being discussed and created all of the time are really all about.
Does RSS need to be improved? Will it be ruined by being improved? Can it be changed? Is that it? Well, let me just ask you the question in a different way. I watched this RSS war as a complete innocent. And I keep wondering, is this about egos? Is this about money? Is this about science and technology? What's your...
Well, you know, frankly, yeah, there are a couple of minor technical nits, but I think primarily this is just, there's some ego stuff that's happening. I think RSS is great, and, you know, in fact, and Technorati supports it, and, you know, in fact, you can get Technorati output as RSS feeds. But at the same time, Technorati has to be agnostic in terms of the formats and standards that it listens to. Because, you know, if there are people out there who are, you know, writing in some Swahili dialect, I would love to be able to input that Swahili dialect, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to make this format is best. Let the market decide which format is best. And more importantly, what's usually the case is that there isn't one best format. There is usually a number of best formats depending on what you're trying to do. Use the best tool for the job. That's my perspective. And from a tool maker's perspective, right?
Yep.
Of course, the fewer the standards that people use, the better, because then it's easier to implement. But from a perspective of, you know, hey, this is real life and we're here on the web, what I care about is that people are using these standards at all. That's the most important thing. The fact that people are using these content management tools, you know, these weblogging tools, that's really what's revolutionary about weblogs, right? Is that, number one, it makes it easy for people to publish. But number two, what it does is it creates additional metadata that gets put into your weblogs, and that tools like Technorati can come in and can now use to help make more sense out of what you're doing.
You want to define metadata for us newcomers?
Sure. So the idea of metadata is just data about data.
Yes.
Okay? It's data that describes data. Let me give you an example. Okay?
Well, your page is metadata.
Our page is, to a certain extent, yes. Yeah, you know, you can say, oh, here's the top 100 weblogs that people are linking to. That's all based on, that's some metadata that we're displaying back to you. But I mean it even from a more sort of tactical standpoint. I'll give you a very, very simple piece of metadata, right? One is the permalink. Okay, a permalink is that when you post something to your weblog, most weblogging tools nowadays will create a special URL that defines the permanent link, which is where the word permalink comes from, to your post.
Yes.
And what this means is that anybody, anywhere in the world who reads the stuff that you're writing can now take that permalink and link to it from their weblog.
Yes.
And so it's this wonderful way to now describe or to point to this, well, let's just call it micro-content for the moment.
A particular entry, yeah.
Yeah, your particular blog entry is a piece of micro-content that's on your blog, right? And so I'm trying to not get too techy about all this stuff.
Okay.
And if I get too techy, stop me. But the idea being that now, instead of just somebody linking to your weblog or your weblog page, they're actually linking to a specific piece of information that's on your weblog.
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot of data.
Yep.
And that's purely just, that's using just regular URLs, right? Let me give you another piece of information that's incredibly useful and that's being, you know, that's being populated using all of these weblogging tools. The date and time that you posted on your weblog.
Why is that important?
So imagine what happened, right? Bring yourself back to 1993, 1994, okay? And on the web, you had all of these different search engines that were going out there, and to a certain extent, you know, they were trying to do a lot of the similar things that Technorati does, which is they go out and they pull down all this data and they try to do analysis on it, and they try to figure out, you know, what's related to what, okay? And they failed pretty horribly. I mean, I'm not sure how much you remember, but the pre-Google days, right? But search engines weren't all that great. But yet, we all thought that the sort of the search engine business was done and finished.
Hmm.
And then you had this little company come out of nowhere that took advantage of one fundamental piece of metadata, right, that changed the whole way that we look at search, changed the whole way that the world, in a sense, organizes its information. And that company was Google. And that piece of metadata was the hyperlink.
Yes.
In the sense that really, when we look at the web and you say, oh, it's so infinite, there's just, you know, anybody can set up a website, anybody can, you know, post pictures of their cats to the web. Yeah, you're right. The fundamental economy or the scarcity economy that we're living in with the web is not about servers and bits and bytes. That is, for all essential purposes, infinite. The one thing that this economy revolves around, this web economy, is an economy of attention. The one thing that we don't have enough of is time.
Right.
And so what Google did is they realized that when people hyperlink, when people link to one another, that these are votes of attention. And when you link to something from your blog, you're linking a vote of attention. You're making a vote saying, I think this is interesting, or I think it's stupid, or I think whatever it is, but it was worth my time to go and read, and I'm relating myself to it. And just from that one piece of metadata, Google was born and a whole new way of doing search was born. Well, what if we added one new piece of metadata? I mean, I'm just talking about one new piece of metadata, and that is when that link was created. Well, now all of a sudden you can do some really interesting things like thread the web. See, if you can actually now tell not only when the what the link was and who it was pointed to, but also know when it was created, you can start to get links of causality. You can also start to look at things like social networks of who's influencing whom, and how do these ideas propagate from one person to the next and why do they die out when they die out, right? I think that, you know, this is just a humongously fascinating aspect of research. And
it could be Malcolm Gladwell's next book, too.
Could be, yeah. I mean, and we have barely scratched the surface. That's just one more piece of metadata. So I think that, you know, the idea here is, well, what are some of these metadata pieces that are now being described so succinctly in the blogs? I mean, another one is just the title of your post.
Hmm.
When you blog something and you put a title on that, there's actually a piece of metadata that allows computers and allows spiders, like Technorati Spider, to know, oh, this is how you titled this. And we can weight that information more intelligently because of that. And so on and so on and so on. You know, what are the MP3s that you're listening to today? What books are you reading? I mean, all of this kind of information, this metadata, is built into the weblogging tools.
I want one little bit of metadata from you. I mean, you're so interesting to me. I want to know who's interesting to you out there. Who? What are your absolutely indispensable sources and inspirations and blogs?
Wow. I'd say go to Sifri's Alerts and look at my blog roll.
Which I do, yeah.
And Sifri's Alerts is www.sifri.com/alerts. It changes as time goes, but I think that there are a bunch of people who are absolutely influential, and rather than list every single one of them here and potentially piss one of them off because I forgot one of them, I'd say go and take a look at my blog roll, and take a look at the people that I point to and that I link to, because I think that's another very fascinating aspect, right, Chris? If you say, well, gosh,
sure,
you know, there's this tremendous amount of implicit data about who I care about, and that's just, you know, from the links in my blog. Who do I link to, right?
It's an amazing new world, and you're out there way ahead of everybody I know, David. I'm just so very grateful for a chance to gab with you. And if you'll let me, I'll come back one of these days.
I would love it. I love your stuff, and I think that what you're doing is fantastic.
It's a whole lot of fun. It's a whole lot of fun. I'm meeting a better class of people out here in the blog world.
And send in your feedback. We're always, you know, I'm really, really interested in finding new ways. How can we make it better? How can we make the service better, more valuable?
Well, I say the same to you and to others who listen. I'm especially interested in sort of building a kind of voice-driven, a real voice-driven analog to this whole blog sphere, and how to draw it into a, you know, a conversation with what Studs Terkel's calls Vox Humana. I mean, it carries so much interest that even the best page cannot. To hear a tone of voice, an accent, a level of excitement, personality, fear, dread, hope, whatever we hear in human voices, we hear a great deal of the organism. And I want to get this out into blog world too. So
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that that all of the additional modalities. Text is a terrible modality. I mean, it's not terrible. It's great for what it does, but it leaves out so much.
Voice is older and deeper, and maybe in the long run better. Anyway, we're just experimenting and having a whole lot of fun with it, David. But we will follow Technorati, and we will talk again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much,
David Sifri. Thank you.